Today we welcome Australian children's and adult author Jack Heath. He has written 20 action-packed books for kids. As of February this year, he was the fourth best-selling fiction author in Australia. He's also a crazy Jack Bauer fan, and we test his 24 knowledge at the end of the interview. I'm Danny V, your host. If you enjoy this episode, why not check out some more? We have an impressive back catalogue, including Tristan Banks, Longmire's Craig Johnson, Jackie French, Rusty Young, Kate Forsyth, Will Kostakis, Tim Harris, Dr. Michael Muhammad Ahmed, and so many more.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Thank you so much for your time today, Jack. I'm super excited to talk about such a wide range of topics, such as writing for children, spy thrillers.
Thank you. I am really looking forward to all of those things also. Yeah, that's absolutely right. I usually, when I'm writing a book, I'm not just in this for the money. I think there's probably easier ways to make money. But I do usually write a book when I've got some kind of problem to solve, often a philosophical one, mm-hmm. Or even a few.
And that's a common thread throughout your novels. Moving on to the children's book, they are fast-paced, action-packed, and you describe yourself as an author who is a writer of over-the-top books. Was this something you felt like you were missing when you were a kid, these kind of novels that were just action-packed and really interesting for you in particular?
Yes and no. So, I mean, I've always been a voracious reader, and particularly in primary school. In year five, I had a crippling ear infection for most of a year, and I could have ended up academically behind, except that I had this wonderful primary school librarian named Kay Peach, who ensured that I always had something exciting and interesting to read. And then I got to high school, and we were being made to read sort of social realism texts, which are probably great for society, but I didn't find them very entertaining at the time. And most of my friends, they kind of turned away from literature and just turned to video games and TV shows. And I like those things too, for the record. But I already knew that books could be exciting. I thought the problem wasn't that books are boring. The problem is that these stories are boring. So I just started kind of writing a novel which was like a video game in terms of the level of action in it. And so that novel became The Lab, which was sort of my breakout book. It was published when I was in my late teens. And having written one book of pretty much nonstop action all the time, and having had it be such a big success, it just became my genre. At that time, kind of no one else was doing it. Matthew Riley was doing it, mm-hmm. but he was doing the same thing for an older audience.
Yeah.
So having found my niche, I just kind of stuck with it.
Now, I've been reading 500 Minutes of Danger to my five-year-old, but I know a 17-year-old who's also reading it and came up to me because I'm a teacher and he was like, oh, miss, I love this book and I'm really enjoying it. So I think, isn't that strange or interesting?
Oh, wonderful.
That this novel has gone from five-year-olds to a person of my age. So it's got such a wide span. Like, did you think that when you were writing something like that, you know, those awesome short stories, that it would appeal to such a wide audience?
I'd love to pretend that it was as strategic as that. In reality, so I'm delighted to hear that it's been such a hit in your family. But I'm always trying to write the kinds of books that I would like to read, or the kinds of books that I would have liked to read when I was younger. But mostly the broad age range that these books appeal to is just because I can't resist making them fun for me as well. Mm-hmm. I'm not just – so in the case of 300 Minutes of Danger, that came about because the publisher wanted me to write a book of short stories and they wanted them to be in real time. So full credit to Scholastic, that was their idea. But they didn't have any particular idea of what the stories should be about. So I pitched some stories at them, and then in the final draft I had this idea that the stories could all be linked, so it could read like a novel rather than like a book of short stories. And that turned out to be a hit, but it meant that every following one I wrote, I was just trying to write as exciting stuff as I possibly could the kinds of things that I would enjoy. The only limitation I place on myself in order to appeal to the younger crowd is A, one of vocabulary. You know, I don't describe anything as having recapitulation or or whatever. I try to keep it down to a couple of syllables. And the other thing is just rules about content. So Scholastic told me in no uncertain terms, you know, no drugs, no coarse language, no, pretty much anything else goes. So appealing to a broad age range is just because the age that I am is not the age that I'm writing for. Mm-hmm. So naturally, the book ends up appealing to both.
And I love the real time. Instantly, I had thoughts of 24, the series, and went, oh, real time.
That's extremely deliberate. I owe a lot of what I know about storytelling to 24, I think, because I loved that show when it was on back in the day. And me that too. Was people are comparing Hangman to Dexter now,
yeah.
But 24 was actually the one that was much more influential. Every episode is mm-hmm. Jack Bauer doing a terrible thing for the greater good. With other people saying, oh, no, you can't do that, Jack. that's a bad idea. That's immoral. That's illegal or whatever. And then him saying, we don't have time, and then doing it anyway. I thought it was so great to have a show exploring, you know, interesting philosophy stuff in an action-packed sort of way. So the action-packed side became the Danger series and the philosophy side became kind of the Hangman series.
I love that. And I know that we've had a bit of social media banter about how much we do love 24. So we'll end with a bit of a 24 quiz at the end, because I know we have this shared right. love of Jack Bauer, because I want to be Jack Bauer. I don't know who you want to be, but Jack Bauer is. I refuse to talk about him like a fictional character. He's real to me.
Well, that's the mark of a good character, isn't it? You don't even need to ask yourself, what would Jack Bauer do? You just know.
That's right. I know. I want to talk about something a little bit different before we go there. Sure. I read that you spent a year reading books written only by women to raise the profile of female authors. What compelled you to do this? I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, well, a few years ago, I was talking to Justine Labalestia, who's a wonderful young adult author and a friend of mine, and we were just discussing our favourite books, as authors want to do, and she pointed out that pretty much all the books that I had listed were written by men. And I asked me why that was the case, and I couldn't tell her. I honestly didn't know. So I just kind of set this challenge to myself, like, okay, I'll spend a year reading only books by women and see what I learn. Like, I thought I would discover either that, you know, there were differences in writing style or in genre or maybe, well, I wasn't exactly sure what I would find out. The main thing I discovered was just the sheer volume of amazing women writing amazing work. And so I still read mostly books by women just because in that year I discovered so many authors that I otherwise wouldn't have come across. So that means that whenever someone asks me for, you know, a book recommendation, I'm typically recommending something written by a woman these days, which is probably a good thing because it offsets some of the bias in the publishing industry, albeit in my small way. But also, I found that I think it's a really good idea to set reading challenges for yourself, mm-hmm. because otherwise you fall into these habits and don't even realize that you're in them. And so sometimes it's a subconscious bias thing like I had, like men write manly books and I'm a man, therefore I should read manly books because it becomes an identity thing. Or sometimes I know authors who only read kind of bestsellers, mm-hmm. you know, they fall into that trap. And that's a really bad thing for authors to fall into, because then if you're only reading what everyone else reads, eventually you find yourself only writing what everyone else writes,
yeah.
and you lose your edge. Or sometimes people only read in the one genre. I used to work in a bookstore, and there were certainly people who would, adults typically, kids are a little bit more open-minded, but adults would walk to the fantasy section and never look anywhere else, or they'd walk to the crime section and never walk anywhere else. In fact, the fantasy people were often resentful of the fact that it said sci-fi / fantasy, because they went, but I'm a fantasy reader, I never touch sci-fi, that's garbage, and why should it be in the same section? Whereas I think the more you challenge yourself with your reading, the more you branch out, the better your writing will be and the better your understanding of the world will be. And yes, you'll end up reading a lot more things that you don't enjoy. But the things that you discover that you do enjoy, you will love them so much more. And sometimes it starts a love affair with not just a new book, but a whole new writer or even a whole new genre.
Something I did notice throughout your novels was the inclusion of both men and women in positions of authority, which obviously is something we should see more of, but unfortunately we don't. Has this been a conscious decision of yours, or you don't think about it at all?
No, I think about it quite a lot, actually. There was a period when I was really struggling to get my books published. And a big factor in that was probably that Borders and Negus and Robertson had just collapsed, and Amazon had its hands around the neck of the publishing industry. So there wasn't a lot of money to splash around on new manuscripts anyway. But the main characters of those books that I was writing were mostly girls. And later I worked in a bookstore and I saw over and over again this situation where, I would be recommending a book to a parent who was looking for something to buy for their child. And they would be totally on board with the idea of the book until they realized that the gender of the main character wasn't the gender of the child that they had. Mm-hmm. It would be, they'd be looking for an action-packed sci-fi novel for their son, and then I'd hand them Lifespan of Starlight by Talia Kolkapsakis, which is wonderful, and they'd be on board for all the time travel and the chips in people's wrists and the death-defying stunts, and then they'd realize that the hero was a girl and they wouldn't buy it. Or, parents coming in looking for, a romance novel for their daughter because either that's what their daughter likes or it's what they think their daughter likes. And then they find a copy of, Boy Meets Boy by David Levithan, which is this wonderful love story, but it's about boys and they don't buy them. I'm not sure that reading bias exists in the kids themselves. Mm-hmm. Certainly when I was a kid, I was very happy to read books about girls. And most of the girls I knew were happy to read books about boys, but certainly the people actually buying the books, the parents, were much more conservative in their choices. And certainly publishers, when I was writing about girls, were reluctant to buy my manuscripts. Now, obviously, one possibility is just that I'm not good at writing female characters. So I should say that I can't assume that everyone else is the problem. It could easily have been me. But I thought, okay, so I'll go back to doing what everyone wants me to do. I'll write books mostly about boys because that's what publishers will buy and it's what parents will buy for their kids. But there's no way that I'm going to let my whole cast of characters be kind of washed out in that way. Mm-hmm. So I developed a kind of rule, which was that basically every character in the story, other than potentially the main character, I would make them female unless there was a specific reason not to. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, if it would reinforce an existing stereotype, or if something incredibly horrible was going to happen to them and it would come across as me endorsing violence against women or something like that. And one of the things that I've discovered is that there's a lot of talk about how to create strong female characters, but and that's very difficult to do with one female character, because if you've got just the one, then she's got to kind of embody everything that she has to fulfill all her duties as a character while also not reinforcing any stereotypes, while also being, a good role model, or there's all this stuff.
And realistic kind of too.
Yeah, that's right. You end up with that kind of thing of she's got to be brilliant at science and, an expert marksman and in charge, but also not unrealistically perfect to send a bad message. I don't know. You end up in this quagmire of focusing on politics rather than story, I guess. But if instead you just have tons and tons and tons of female characters, then firstly, just by the numbers, some of them come out really well, like Dessa Kormenenko from the Cutout series.
Yeah, I loved her.
Well, me too. She started out as a kind of minor character, but then she had so much personality that she found her way more and more and more into the story. And she could easily have been male, but because of my rule of just trying to put as many girls and women in the story as possible, it means that you find those strong female characters amongst them. So instead of just trying to create one. You just create as many as you can and then just kind of cherry pick the ones who work.
That's really interesting, and it's something I did notice, so I'm pleased that it was a conscious decision that you're making.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you like it. I certainly, there are readers who know me well. My wife's one of them, who they look at my manuscripts and go, I see what you're doing here, Jack. So they can sense my own kind of hidden gender equality agenda. But of course, as soon as you sense that the writer has an agenda, then the characters stop feeling like real people. Mm-hmm. So I'm very glad that that it's only the people who know me best, like my wife and my friends, who can see that I'm actually doing this stuff consciously. Well, I don't want to pretend that I'm all free and clear of biases now, and you can never see your own blind spots. Mm-hmm. And still, like I said, I read mostly books by women now, but whenever I'm doing it, I'm still typically aware that I'm reading a book by a woman as I'm reading it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I often, when I'm reading a book by a man and I look at the female characters seem less convincing to me, but I'm not actually convinced that the author has done a bad job. It's just that I am, I'm sort of examining them harder, you know, and giving them more scrutiny than I would if it was a female author. So I'm not free of those biases, but I think all authors have an obligation to do the best they can.
Wouldn't it be interesting if we sent each other a book that was unknown, we crossed out the author and we read it without that bias? That'd be interesting.
Yeah. I wish more authors wrote using their initials rather than their names, because at the moment it's primarily, I think, female authors who do it, which means that it's not great as a disguise.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're right. Now, one of the last things I wanted to bring up was the fact that you were awarded 2009 ACT Young Australian of the Year Award because you're the second Australian of the Year I've spoken to on the podcast, and I thought that was really cool. Jackie French was the other one.
Oh, wonderful. Right? I'm a big fan of Jackie.
Oh, who isn't? So I think I'm going to start collecting you and see what other authors become Young Australians. Tell us quickly about this experience. It must have been mind-blowing.
It was. It was a complete shock. So the ACT Writers Centre nominated me for the award without my knowledge, and then I was invited to the event and placed on the shortlist, and that was a surprise. And then when I actually won, I mean, I hadn't prepared a speech or anything. God knows what I actually said when I was up there on the podium. It was probably nothing especially inspiring, but I had always gone through. Particularly with awards like that and the kind of kid I was at school, like I had always thought, I'd assumed that, you know, the Australian of the Year awards always went to cricketers because I didn't pay much attention, but I just figured it was usually a sport thing.
And
as a kid, I was never very sporty, but it felt like that kind of recognition was often given to sports people. The idea that an author could be, I don't know, it's difficult to describe, but because now I'm aware of all these literary awards and stuff, but as a kid I was not aware of literary awards, and in fact I wasn't even aware of famous authors really. Like, mm-hmm. I knew the authors that I read, but I didn't think of them as celebrities or people who were important or people who other people should aspire to be like or anything like that. And that's probably served me pretty well, because I still don't think I'm very important or should be given any amount of respect. It just makes me uncomfortable, all the attention whenever anyone does pay any attention to me rather than my work. I take my work very seriously, but myself not at all. But standing up there on that podium with this trophy, which remains the only trophy I've ever received for anything, it was so surreal. And I thought it was the first time I actually thought that I had done something out of the ordinary,
and
I guess.
You can win an award without having to play cricket. How cool is that?
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Turns out you can win an award without playing cricket.
Yes.
But I should also add that I mean no disrespect to cricketers.
Of course not. It's a great Australian sport.
That's right.
You've got a bunch of things coming up. You were talking about your follow-up to Hangman called Just One Bite. Is that correct?
Yep, released, that's the working title at the moment.
Your working title, released 2019-20. You've got another novel, Liars, and you also have a secret cameo project. Is this still a secret?
It's secret enough that I shouldn't tell you what it's in, but I can tell you about it a little bit.
Cool.
Basically, one of my books was optioned for a virtual reality film. So it's a short film in VR. And so I got to fly down to the set in Melbourne and meet the actors who were playing the characters, and meet some directors and producers and go on set. And that was all exciting. And then I got to dress up in a suit, which is something I don't wear very often, and pretend to be a newsreader. So I only had two lines, but it only took me about 40 takes to get them right. So I hope people like it when it comes up, but I still can't tell you what it actually is yet.
It's okay. I feel like there was a little bit, you know, we got a little bit more information, so I'm happy with that. Now, finally, before we say goodbye, I want to talk Jack Bauer. I've got 5 questions for you.
Okay, great.
Are you ready? This is easy.
I assume it's timed though, right?
Sure, of course. Of course. I didn't think of that. I'll add a ticking clock in the editing process.
Okay, great.
Your favourite Bauer sidekick?
My favourite Bauer sidekick would, I know it's a cliche, but definitely Chloe. She's great.
Oh, yes. I had Chloe and closely second place, Tony. I was a bit in love with Tony.
Tony Almeida.
Yeah, totally.
He has great sort of a hunch that makes him seem very brooding and interesting.
Right. Favourite villain?
Oh, definitely Arnold Vosloo, who now he played the mummy in the mummy movies. I don't remember much of what he did other than that he made a very sinister terrorist in the show.
I'm actually going with Nina because that was when the series could still shock me so much. Now I just expected, like when you got on, you expected anyone to be the villain and everyone to die. But when I was watching the first year, I was like, what? How is Nina the villain?
Even after Jack saved her life with that flak jacket.
Right.
Such a great moment.
Favourite director of CTU?
George Mason.
Uh-huh.
Hard to, I mean, there were, I feel like there were other good moments from other directors, but George I thought was a complex character. You know, he had his moments of cowardice and pigheadedness and you know, just general bigwig foolery, but he turned out all right in the end.
Yeah, I probably agree. I did like Bill Buchanan as well. I had a soft spot for that guy. Yeah.
Any time I see that actor in anything else, I'm always like, hey, it's Bill Buchanan.
Just Bill Buchanan, right? I agree. Playing. Yeah. And favourite president, last question.
Oh, favourite president. Again, I'm a big fan of the sort of more complex characters. So I'm going to go with Logan.
Oh, I mean, Logan.
I wouldn't have voted for Logan. I would have voted for Palmer. Logan was the one I found the most, maybe I should have picked him as favourite villain rather than favourite president. Spoilers again. But I found him very interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I did like David Palmer, but you're right. Logan's far more interesting and put far more roadblocks in front of Jack. So,
yeah, that's right. And there's a moment where he's talking to his wife and standing way too close and tilting his head way too much as he tries to sort of explain what he's done. And it's like a moment of, whoa, you haven't changed your mannerisms that much, but now I can see that you're a sociopath.
Well, I'm glad we got to have that Jack Bauer discussion. I've been looking forward to it. No one really shares my love of Jack Bauer, so I feel like I've found someone else.
Yeah. I've never managed to find someone as willing to talk about 24 as long as I am.
Well, anytime, just send me a tweet and we'll Jack Bauer it out.
Absolutely. In public. That'd be great.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us on the podcast today. It's been such a fun chat. Thank you again so much. It's been a really fun chat and such a pleasure to talk to you. And like I said, I've loved reading your books, both for myself and to my children. So thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.